Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Decorating Pages is a podcast dedicated to taking you behind the scenes of the designs of your favorite TV shows and films. Each episode, I'll be sharing design stories from some of Hollywood's most famous sets, interviews from set decorators, production designers, directors, and actors about creating the look of TV and film, about their design inspirations, and stories that take sets from page to screen. Hey now.
Welcome to Decorating Pages. I am your host, Kim Wanup. How's it going? Look at this, 2 weeks in a row. I can do this. Yes. Hi. How's it going? Hope you are well. I have a fantastic episode for you. The production designer, Mark Ricker, and set decorator, Cherish Hale. Oh boy. Really good episode. I was so excited. I did this a couple weeks back. I got to talk to them. I got the whole season like a month in advance. So I've been waiting on this. I saw Capote versus the Swans like a long time ago. I've been waiting for this. I prepared for this for a while because I've been waiting to watch this series and to have this interview and then to put out this podcast. I had to wait till Thursday to put it out because the finale was last night. So we'll get into it. Anywho, the Oscars. Let's talk about the winner. Let's talk again about awards. I talked a lot last week about awards, SDSA awards, ADG awards. Let's talk about the Emmys. We also had the Emmys I didn't talk about. I went to the Creative Emmys, the Emmys didn't happen in September as usual because of the strikes. They happened in early January, which is like a first. And it was odd and it was cold, and I am the Emmy governor for the art directors and set decorators peer group. So as a perk of that, I get to go to the Emmys, the real Emmys. I've had the privilege of going to the Creative Emmys before when I have been nominated, and that's awesome. I have never gone to the Creative Emmys to the Variety Night. Because my category is not variety. So I also got to go to that night. So I went to three nights of the Emmys. It was pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. I had three dresses, people. And it was fun to see people win in different categories. And I'll tell you what, the variety people, it's a different vibe. They know how to party. They are out in that lobby. They're at the bar. I mean, I thought we were at the bar. They're at the bar. The real Emmys, I will tell you what, the set was designed by Brian Stonestreet, who you can listen to on this podcast. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic to have the sets of shows, recognizable shows, throughout the show. Cheers, Ally McBeal. I mean, I just thought that it reached people and made people think about shows that they loved and adored and, you know, brought back good memories to people. And, you know, I hope that somehow they continue that because I thought it tugged at some heartstrings and I thought it was a fantastic idea. One of the reasons that I can say we, because I am on these committees, is because it was the 75th anniversary of Emmy. So there were a lot of special things that went on. We also created a list of the 75 impactful moments of Emmy. And that list is on the website if anyone wants to check those out. So there were a lot of little special things because of the 75th year. The actual Emmy statue was engraved with a special emblem on it, the 75th on there, which I thought was really special. And so let's talk about the Emmy winners. The Emmy winner for production design for a narrative contemporary went to Wednesday. And that is production designer Mark Schrutten and set decorator Robert Hepburn, art director Adrian Corella. You can hear Mark on this podcast. He was a doll to talk to last year. That's a really good show. That was a tough category. I will tell you that. Let's see. The next category was production design for a period or fantasy. I thought this was a bit of an upset because it's a tough one. They're all tough. Daisy Jones, House of Dragons, Perry Mason, Miss Maisel, and Cabinet of Curiosities won. Production designer Tamara Deverell, art director Brandon Gordon, and set decorator Shane View, who you can hear on this podcast. It was like 2 years ago I spoke with him. That is a fabulous series. So that's hard. That's a hard one to beat too. They're all great. The next category was outstanding production design for Half Hour. Went to Only Murders in the Building. Production designer Patrick Howell. You can hear him and set decorator Rich Murray on this podcast from last year. And art director Jordan Jacobs. Again, that was a hard category. How I Met Your Mother. Schmegadoon. You can hear Jamie McCall on this podcast. What We Do in the Shadows. That you can hear her. The Bear. That was a good one. Outstanding production design for a variety or reality series went to Saturday Night Live. There's five people there. Production designer Akira Yoshimura, production designer Keith Ian Raywood, another production designer Andrea Persiglini. I can't see. I'm horrible. I know. Let me see this. Persiglotti, I know I'm saying it wrong. I'm sorry. Set decorator. They finally got a set decorator on Saturday Night Live. How about that? Danielle Webb. Congratulations, Danielle. How about that? Then next category, outstanding production design for a variety special, went to Apple Music Super Bowl, halftime reality show starring Rihanna. Production designer Bruce Rogers, art director Shelley Rogers, art director Lindsay Burleser, art director Maria Garcia, art director Lily Rogers. No set decorator. How odd. But congratulations to all of those Emmy winners. It was awesome to actually go to the real Emmys and the ball. Oh my God. The governor's ball. The food was fantastic. The music is fantastic. They engraved everyone's statues there at the Emmys. It was really special and really nice. I highly recommend it. I don't know. If anyone ever gets to go, highly recommend it. So let's talk about something recent, the Oscars. The Oscars were this past weekend, and the Oscar winner for production design went to Poor Things. Set decorator Zizuka Mikhail, I can't. And production designer, thank God, James Price. And congratulations to them. I was pulling for Barbie. But Poor Things, it was so creative. Yeah, well deserved. Very congratulations to all of the nominees there. As a whole of the Oscars, I love seeing all of the past winners present to the new winner. I find that so touching. And I'll tell you what, I've decided I can't watch the Oscars with anyone anymore. I basically cry at everything. I cried when Jimmy brought out the crew. Oh my God, I just called myself staff. Jesus. When he brought out the crew and said, "We will be behind you in your negotiations," I bawled. Because I really hope that's true, Jimmy. I really hope actors and writers... I love that he called out the DGA for buckling. That meant something to me that he said it out loud and he brought people on stage. I felt that. I did. I cry for the In Memoriam. I cry when people win. I don't know. This means something to me. I have watched the Oscars since I can remember. This is what I have wanted to do my whole life. And I'm a dork. And it means something to me. That's it. So I cry. That's it. So I can't watch the Oscars with anyone anymore. My husband was a doll. And he took the boys out. And I got to watch half of it alone, and the rest, they were good boys, and they were quiet. And mommy had red eyes, and they were asking me why I was so happy crying, and I was like, it's just great. Anyway, so yeah, I thought the Oscars were good. I thought the set was great. I forgot to look up who did the set. Damn. But yes, so congratulations to everyone who won something this past 3 months. I didn't win anything. Cool. All right. But I love talking about people who win. I love talking to people who do great work, and that's why I'm here. Let's talk about what I'm watching. There is a series on Apple called The New Look, and it is about Christian Dior in, what is it, World War II? Yeah, because it's Hitler. And about Coco Chanel, and who knew Coco Chanel was a Nazi sympathizer. I never knew this. And it's a great story. And just how his, like, the Nazis and his, how he designed through the war. And I believe it's a production designer, Anne Siebel, and set decorator Christelle Maisonneuve. I don't know if it's French. So congratulations to them. Wonderful looking series. If you can catch that, it's on Apple. I think they're like 7 episodes in. Love it. I watched a documentary on Netflix called Bombshell about Hedy Lamarr. Oh, Hedy Lamarr. Who knew? She did like the first sex scene. Well, it was in Germany, and then they brought it over here, and it was like the first sex scene or something. And then she was so smart. She came up with like patents. She came up with sonar. And then she came up with like all of these things, like with radar and switching channels. And basically, like, her invention is what cell phones are now, worth like $62 billion or something. It's a crazy story. She is such a trailblazer. Even in like plastic surgery, she was doing stuff like in the 40s and 50s that like they do today. They still do. Like, she was the first. It's a great documentary. She was so beautiful. My goodness. That was good. I watched a really good old movie called, it's a little slow. It's called Witness for the Prosecution. Okay. It's got Marlena Dietrich in it and Tyrone Power. I think it's Billy Wilder. The ending is really good. I wasn't going to recommend this movie. It's black and white. It's good. But the ending has such a good twist for it, for 1957. It's really good. Check it out. I don't know. Maybe it's on AMC. I forget. It's on one of my streaming services. I don't know how I saw it. That is production designer Alexander Turner and set decorator Howard Bristol. Heard that name a million times. Howard Bristol had a tremendous career. I watched The Sting, which I feel like I saw when I was little. I don't know why. And then I watched it. It's such a good movie. God, it's so good. Paul Newman is so good. Production designer Henry Bumstead, who is like one of the greats. And set decorators, Emil Curry and James Payne. Man, they've had careers. And then I watched the original Wuthering Heights, which, that's a downer. Let me just tell you, that's a downer. Who was that art director? Oh, wait, but this is what I'm telling you about Wuthering Heights, which I never knew. The woman in Wuthering Heights that Heathcliff marries to get back at, what's her name, Catherine, is the grandmother in Arthur. You know Dudley Moore, Arthur? That's the grandmother. And is the grandmother or mother in Easy Money, the old lady. She's the old lady in the early 80s. She's beautiful in Wuthering Heights, 1939. Isn't that crazy? I was like, who is this actress? I looked her up. I couldn't believe it. She's the old ugly woman in the early 80s. Oh, couldn't believe that. Anyway, talking to myself here. But Wuthering Heights, the production design is really well done of this old, you know, rundown house that Heathcliff like grows up in and like takes over, which he takes over this house because he gets money, but then he doesn't fix it up, which I don't get. So it's this contrast of then she moves to this really rich mansion and everything, which is opulent and beautiful. Just for a contrast of color and the cinematography. And I think in 1939, well, I know, was Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, but I believe the cinematography winner of the Academy Awards was Wuthering Heights and not Gone with the Wind. I don't know how that happens. I don't know. So, what else did I watch? Oh, you know what I'm reading? Ooh, you won't believe what I'm reading. What am I reading? I know what I'm reading, but I'm going to save that for next week. But what I read while I was watching Capote is this book that I think decorators would like called How They Decorated by P. Gay Tapp. And it is a book featuring women who just have had style throughout the decades. They have Babe Paley. They talk about Billy Baldwin. They talk about like Lady Diana Cooper or Evangeline Bruce or Georgia O'Keeffe. They just select these women throughout history who were just born with either decorating style or clothing style, and it's just in them, and they knew how to do it. And it's like, you know, each woman gets like 3 or 4 pages, and it's beautifully handled with pictures and drawings. So I definitely would recommend that if you have a decor library. Again, How They Decorated by P. Gay Tapp. And it coordinates with this episode because they talk about Babe Paley, who was one of Truman Capote's swans. So, huh, there you go. How do you like that? Oh, before I start this episode, I wanted to let you know that I was invited to speak on a panel at WonderCon, which is in Anaheim in late March, which is, I think, March 28th, 29th, 30th. I will be there March 30th, 5 p.m., I believe. The panel is called In a World, How World Building Happens with Prop Masters and Set Decorators. I know that I'll be talking about The Good Place and For All Mankind. Jan Pascal will be their set decorator, talking about Obi-Wan, I'm sure, and the Prop Master will be there. And I know the panels aren't set yet, so there will be others too. So if you can, I'm sure there are others being set up. So I'm sure tickets are available. Again, WonderCon in the Anaheim Convention Center, the weekend of the 28th, 29th, and 30th. So yeah, check that out. On this episode, I speak with production designer Mark Ricker and set decorator Cherish Hale. These two have collaborated many times, and as recently on Netflix's series Halston, which I watched a couple times. And their latest work is just simply stunning. FX's Feud, Capote vs. the Swans, is an 8-episode limited series based on the best-selling book Capote's Women, A True Story of Love, Betrayal, and a Swan Song for an Error by Lawrence Leamer. A book I devoured over last summer to prep for this series because I knew it was coming up. The sets that Mark and Cherish created are lush and glamorous and just enchanting. I am a huge fan of Mark's work. I must have watched Julia and Julia a million times, as I tell him. And Cherish has been a decorator for more than 25 years. I love her work. They are both Emmy, ADG, and SDSA nominees. And a little trivia, Cherish and I went to the same college. Isn't that crazy? It is such a small world. So I hope you enjoy.
Hi,
so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I have, Mark, I have so many people who have worked with you and adore you, so it's nice to...
Well, and here's another one.
There's another one. I know Gabe Perillo very well.
Who's that?
Gabe Perillo, prop master.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And love
her. And so I've just been a fan of yours also. And I know that I've never met with you. Cherish and I, you and I went to Philadelphia College of Textiles and Sciences. How crazy!
So funny!
How crazy is that? I was looking it up and I'm like,
oh, the school. And
I know. And I love that you call it that because that's what I call it. Although I'm the year, because it's on its third like reinvention right now.
What is it now? It's Jefferson.
Now it's Jefferson. The year I graduated, it turned to Philadelphia University. So it's PU. But I always call it textile. So awesome to meet with you. And I'd love to like get your email so I could chat with you more after this. But but so fantastic to talk with both of you. I'm also
thinking about it. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You know how they do the monthly magazine?
Yeah.
Were you on it?
Like a long time ago.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That being like, oh, there's another set decorator who,
oh my god, that's so funny. It's Mark, it's such a small college. Like I think I've met six people ever, and I go to like the alumni events out here.
Like, where is it?
It's in Philly. Uh-huh. Philly, but it was perfect for me. I mean, we'll talk about it later, but yeah, I loved it, but I got the hell out of there. I'm from Philly, South Jersey. But now I've been here over 20 years, but I'll never say I'm from here. I don't know. I can't.
You're in LA.
Yeah, I can't do it. I have this like sort of kind of obsession with Capote. I love all his work. I love the movie Capote that Jess Gonscher did. I like love that movie. I'm wondering, even though you did Halston before and you're in this sort of Ryan Murphy world, what drew you to this project? Because you can say no, but what drew you guys?
Well, I'll tell you that I did do, you know, well, we did Halston together.
Yeah.
Cherish and I had previously worked on Escape at Amora. And
So three times. And obviously you're together times. Again. So four now.
Now we're on four.
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
So we did Halston and we had, you know, a great time on that. And then when they called me about Capote, I was going through a period with some personal stuff in my life that my agent said, Gus Van Sant, Robbie Bates, who I've known for 30 years, Truman Capote and New York, because I needed to be on the East Coast. And I just went, well, you know, that like checks all the boxes.
Oh, that's nice.
And Robbie. And so I, you know, read the pilot and it's, you know, the writing is just so, so great. The next thing I was doing was chatting with Gus from an airline terminal. I mean, just remember, like it was just a phone conversation. Because Ryan and his team, you know, they were thrilled with what we did with Halston, and it just made sense, I think, for them to call us again to create this world. And Gus was new to the experience of doing television and, you know, the structures that apply to everything that it is when you're waiting for scripts and, you know, just it's different than a feature, obviously. And so I think that, you know, they just wanted us to create the world, you know, they just trusted us to create the world that then, you know, Gus could could direct in. So that's how it was presented to me. And, you know, then I brought Cherish back on board. and then she brought a whole, you know, army of decorators with her, because that's what it required.
Yeah, it's...
As you can imagine.
I can imagine. I've done Ryan Murphy. I did Impeachment, and I
saw that. Uh-huh.
Would dive in again if needed. But it's a different standard, as I feel. Like, I feel like every hour, it's a movie. You're creating a movie mm-hmm. every hour. So, and I like that. I like that, especially in the Ryan Murphy world, there is so much love and attention given to the sets, given to the costumes and everything, and it feels appreciated. And it's hard, but I really like that. They like that. They give time to that.
They require it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is hard, and you're dealing with schedule and you're dealing with budgets, as everybody who works in this business knows. Mm-hmm. But there's always a little bit of a, you know, an underline of knowing that they want it done. You know, Ryan's going to want it done right. So,
yeah, there's no holding back. Yeah.
No.
Did you both find it a more challenging thing? I'm sure you had this on Halston too, though, with decorating or trying to reproduce decorated pieces, like the Billy Baldwin decorator and everything with Babe's apartment and everything like that, these styles that were established. Did you find it sort of intimidating of like, oh, we have to reproduce this or anything to that sense?
I don't know if it was intimidating, but there was a specificity that I feel like I just would, if there was ever a conversation where it's like, can we fudge this or can we do? I mean, I'm just thinking particularly on Halston, once we got around to having to recreate the Paul Rudolph townhouse, it was tricky. And also Versailles, which is less, but, you know, iconic interiors.
Yeah.
From Halston and from... When you're talking about Parrish Hadley and Billy Baldwin, and with both projects, for me, and I would assume for you as well, you know, it's like we talk about this all the time, that we just know that there's going to be an audience for this show, a specific audience that is going to know what these places are. Yeah. And you want to get them right. So it's a challenge, but that's the job.
Yeah.
I also think that in some ways it's easier and some ways it's more challenging, because you sort of have a roadmap and you're not, you know, coming up with these ideas. You sort of look at the research and you say, how can we execute this as close as we can? And then, you know, it also presents some difficulties in trying to do that.
Yeah.
Especially in the budgetary department, you know, obviously they had, you know, an endless amount of funds. So us trying to do that on the budget becomes really complicated, you know.
I think this, to me, the standout room in the whole show is the drapery room. office is so fantastic. It's a great room. It's so great. And I don't know why we don't do that more. And I don't know. I just
dust.
Because then I was like, look, when you hang the pictures, you don't see the wire, you don't see the wall. Like, how great is it? It's like,
you have to figure all that out.
Yeah.
I mean, we've now done it twice, because with Halston, he did the same with the you know, canopy, the sense of, it wasn't Billy Baldwin, it was Dongia, but and so that was our dress rehearsal for this one, because we knew how to print. I mean, we recreated the actual. Our graphics designer, Eddie Iafreda, went in and he created the fabric. And so we printed all the fabric. So it wasn't just random fabric forced. I mean, we created it down to exactly what it was, to the best that we could figure it out.
Yeah.
But that pattern in the Billy Baldwin room was.
No, I know. I looked it up. I know. Well, because oddly enough, I just for Christmas got this book, How They Decorated, and it's all about these iconic decorators over the last century, and they do a whole thing on Babe, you know, and her with Just the drapery room and then her bedroom, like it shows all that, which I'm sure you've seen the pictures a million times. But it's only like 2 pages. It's like 5 pages, but it has her thing in there. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God, there's the fabric. And then I have the screenshot and I'm like, oh my God, that's great. Did they print arts? Cause I was going to say, like, how many things do you swatch to try to get that? And then you just got to say, I want it printed. I want it right. Which is right. Really the way to do it and not compromise any of
it. We had to do it kind of twice because the fabric that we used, which is something that we learned, is just kind of a cheap polyester fabric, but it drapes really well because it doesn't wrinkle and it's got movement and stuff. So it's
it can't be heavy because then it won't fold.
Right. You know, and it just doesn't, you know, other fabrics don't really. You can print on a million different things, but then we had to upholster the couch. So we had to run tests on several different kinds of fabric so that we could upholster the couch in something heavier, you know, because the fabric that's on the wall would never hold up.
Right.
On the couch.
No, yeah. I love that room. I love her bedroom. So you had the builds. So you built Babes, you built Capote's apartment and the restaurant.
Yep.
And then did you build any of the other women's, or were those?
No, those were the three base sets that we had standing the whole time. And you know, as Cherish was just saying, because we watched episode 5 last night again. I mean, Cherish hasn't even seen the whole show, so she's
she's
seeing it in real time.
Yeah.
But it's nice that we returned to those three sets so much for the amount of work that went into them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And they hold up, you know, I don't think you ever get bored in them. But those were our three. Do we build anything? I mean, the TV shows and the plane was a thing. The plane was
basically built.
A rebuild of a build. Of, you know, we were presenting a mess and we had to make it, you know, beautiful. Putting lipstick on a pig.
Most airplane rentals are. Was it a rental that you had to rebuild? Yeah.
It was just basically falling apart.
Yeah.
Everything had to be done.
They were very happy when we were done because we presented.
Oh, I'm sure.
But
don't you feel like we all keep redoing those and then you get them every time and you're like, what's this shit? Like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly.
Who rented this before me? Yeah, airplane rentals are gold mine.
Then we built those three sets, and then one of the key, you know, I think one of the ways that we were able to get through the show, I don't know how we would have done it another way, but when I first started scouting out on Long Island for these mansions in Oyster Bay and Sands Point and whatnot, I went back to a house that I had seen for Halston to be David Mahoney, his boss, his house, but it wasn't right for that house. But I saw it again and I thought, oh my God, that would be perfect for Anne Woodward because it was fully dressed. It could work, you know, tweaking. I mean, I was going to go back and see it. And literally on my way out there, they said, oh, by the way, it's empty now. The people sold the house and moved out. And I was like, damn it. But then I got there and it was empty, but an organization had bought it and they were about to begin gut renovating it and turning it into some sort of polo club. They had only done one bedroom, but everything else was still intact and just presented itself to us. It was just a great old mansion with this series of like enfilade that just where all of the rooms were connected. And I was thinking in terms of New York apartments that had that sense of walking from one chamber into the next and a bathroom into a bedroom. And I saw what they had done with one bedroom. And I suddenly had this realization. It's like, oh my God, if we could get in here if we could like figure out their renovation schedule, slip in where we wouldn't have to then restore it back to perfection because they were going to gut everything anyway. And that's exactly what we did. And we just kept going back to that mansion.
Oh, that's great.
It was Anne Woodward's house. It was the kitchen was Cece Guest's kitchen. Hmm. The Happy Rockefeller's bedroom we turned into Slim Keith's dining room. Anne Woodward's
bedroom also was in that house.
Yes, her bedroom with like the giant living room with her entire suite.
Oh, yeah.
Old the French paneled rooms.
And the exterior by the pool.
The stables were at that house. The pool.
Ooh, was had everything.
And yeah. we shot the same rooms. The bedroom that Lee Radswell was decorating when she was hired as a decorator was Ann Woodward's bedroom that we just, you know, and half of Ann was all done in black and white. So it allowed us. And as new directors came in, when Max and Jennifer came in, I was able to just walk them through and say, well, this is what we saw. So we, you know, we knew exactly how we'd seen it. And it was, we just kept going back to that house. So that was, I think, our second stage. I mean, yeah. We treated it as such. Even the 1930s hotel, when with Jessica Lange as a young mother and the young Truman, that was the same suite. Billy Woodward's bedroom from the first episode in black and white became their.
Wow, that was good.
In Alabama, I mean, we just kept. It was a gold mine for us.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Even her the bathroom where, not to reveal too much, but the bathroom where Anne shot Billy, yeah. That was his name, Billy, became, we wallpapered it because we knew again how we had seen it, but that became Babe's apartment bathroom.
Well, I didn't piece any of that together. So fantastic.
Just it all inside and out. So, you know, it was just being able to embrace what was there for us. And
well, how was that schedule for you?
Yeah.
Hey, look, we found one big place to shoot everything. You just have to turn it over 30 times. How was that?
It would have been the same if we had, it would have actually been more challenging if it was all over the place. I mean, the good thing is that everybody was really familiar with that place. So we had like a, you know, a shorthand in how to explain it. Plus everybody knows where to park.
Right. Oh, yeah. The logistics of it all. Yeah. We're going back. Right.
Becomes so much easier, and you know, we could just didn't have to be there and explain, like, you know, what was happening,
right?
And you know, it just
it works out.
It became like being on a stage, you know. Yeah. And it, no matter where we went, it was a complete overhaul. It, you know,
right. So
it could have been anywhere, you know what I mean? It would have been a complete overhaul anyway. So
I think with something like this, I mean, I just assumed somewhere along the way there would be a location where you would walk in and at least there would be 50% of what you're looking for, but it was not the case. On this show, there was not a single place.
No, we didn't. There was no location that we went into that we used.
Because of the period? Because of the... Well, it's such an ultra rich society that you're tapping into, and sort of like the 20th century Gilded Age and all of these New York apartments and everything. I would think that something would still be there, but no, not on.
Well, it could have been, but again, you know, once you're getting scripts, you're just on the, you're on the schedule of how fast can we do this? And I remember getting episode 6 and I happened to be in the mansion again, because we were shooting, and as I'm reading it for the first time, thinking, oh, well, we could just do that, right? I mean, and I just, as I was reading the script the first time, I was walking back through the house, imagining, oh, this could be this, and that could be that, it was almost, I mean, when I went to Gus and the team and just said, I think we should go back to the mansion, I mean, that was, it was a little bit of laughter, but it's what made sense to do. It's
beautiful. Why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, it's like we know it saves time. You know, I don't have to go out and scout for things. Like, here it is.
Yeah.
What was your prep? Was it long? Did you?
Lord, I'd have to.
It was that long.
It was not that long. I mean, Marcy Mudd, who was my art director, came on. She came on early in order to figure out the calendars. I mean, we were given dates and we backed, you know, what will it take to hit Lacote Basque by this date. So we worked, Marcy and our construction coordinator, you know, we figured out and drawings and all of that. So for those three sets, but I honestly can't remember. It might have been like 9 or 10 weeks.
I think it was only like 10 weeks. I remember thinking I should have started sooner. Which is always the case, but really on this one.
I find that I keep running into lately, but we're going to be out like the first week or so. So you'll have time on the stage. And it's like, no, I won't. I'm going to be on location dressing. Like, how does that? That doesn't give me time.
Yeah.
That hurts me.
We did start on Logan. I mean, did we start in the mansion while we were still finessing the sets? We didn't start on those sets.
I can't remember. It's all a blur.
Yeah, I know. It gets to be a blur.
It's like,
you block it out. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Was Capote's apartment modeled after his apartment, or was that a design that you came up with for shooting?
No, it was, I mean, I leaned into it, as is the case when I do projects about real people who existed. I mean, you always just go to the research, and I found the ground plans for the Paley's apartment and Truman's, obviously. And I mean, Truman's was so great. I mean, we adapted it a little bit to make it more interesting, but pretty much that apartment it was his apartment. I mean, the major thing, I mean, we eliminated a bedroom that we didn't need, but the rest of it was the exact footprint. We might've made it a little bit bigger. And then I just added the pass through in the kitchen just to open that up a little bit more for, you know, just so that we would be more photographable. But we literally went to his unit, his apartment, the lovely woman who lived there, in order to shoot the backing.
Oh, wow.
So it's always this moment where it's, you stare at these photos for so long, and then you're standing in the space, and his bathroom had not been renovated at all. It was the exact, the fixtures and the tile. And it was, I mean, we were holding up, Marcy and I were standing there looking, holding up a photograph and saying, here's the grain, you know, here's the marbling and the tile. That
I wonder if she watched it. The show.
Oh, probably.
I hope so.
I don't know.
It would be interesting to see.
She was lovely.
Oh, nice. She was lovely. And, but to me, what was striking too, was the mirror wall that just reflected that view that he had and everything.
We had a big conversation about that, because there it was. I mean, we stared at the photos and we were in the set, and I don't know if it was when we built it. I mean, we must have committed to it before, but we talked to Jason McCormick, our DP, and because we also, it was low ceilings. I mean, you couldn't hide lights anywhere.
Right. It's all practicals now.
But he just said, let's do it. Like, he recognized the worth in that, and we committed to it. I mean, they gimbaled just a little bit, but I don't think that they didn't have to do it that much. They were able to shoot it, and it gave so much life to that.
Oh, I love apartment. But there's,
love that.
There's some shots though where it's like, it's dead on. And I'm like, mm-hmm. How did they do this? Like, I get him so amazed even now. Like, I mean, I'm in this, but I still get amazed of like, how did they do that? Like, they're shooting dead on into this. They got his reflection. It was just beautiful. And reflection of all his Tiffany lights and all of that was so gorgeous.
I think there was a period where, even in looking at photographs, where I had to realize, oh, this is all mirrored, you know, just.
Yeah.
The same thing with Halston. That was looking at photographs of Olympic Tower for Halston was like staring into a kaleidoscope. It was difficult to figure out sometimes where you know, where the mirrors were. But they were able to shoot it. I mean, a few times I think they had to go in with visual effects and take out the camera, but not that much.
Not that much. And then his apartment was so eclectic and so personalized in every way. Like, how was that decorating that and finding all those gems?
It was fun. It was like a treasure hunt, you know, trying to find the fabric to upholster that camelback sofa, you know, that crazy sofa. Mm-hmm. Which luckily my assistant Carol just went to the D&D building. She happened to find something that it wasn't exact, but it was very close. It read very much the same. But you know, finding the Viper was kind of crazy. And it's funny. It's like you just get a whole bunch of random shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, bring it in work? And see what works.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was such an eclectic look. That's what I mean. Like, he wasn't one thing at all. From the bedroom to even the living room is different in the style. And
yeah. I mean, just sort of. It really was like, just go into the shop.
Yes.
We hunted for specific items, like all the paperweights and all those cool shiny lamps and things like that. We really hunted for those things. But for the other stuff, we sort of were like, well, will this work? And we just kind of like went and grabbed stuff and tried it out. And
well, and it's funny, to that point, you remember when you had found that Chinese cabinet.
Yeah.
And then showed up and it was about a third of the size of what we
yeah, I did that all the time.
So then you had to find another one. But the one that showed up, I just suddenly said, well, why don't we just put it here? And it became the bar in that little pass-through area by the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, it
Isn't
worked.
The perfectly. Worst. Like one time I was on a show and it was supposed to be like a woman from Turkey or something. And I was trying to find pottery that I could hang on the wall so that, because I couldn't deal with cleared art. I just didn't have time or whatever. So I ordered this beautiful bowl. And it showed up. It was this big. I'm not even kidding. It was like for a tea bag.
Oh my gosh. I'm
this big. It came to my desk in a box. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, I'm with you. It happens to me more than I'd like to admit.
I know, late night online shopping.
You're like, oh, what is that?
I was like, God, it's so affordable. No wonder why.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's, but sometimes, like, you know, then it works somewhere else. Or, like, I'm sure you put it on her desk and, like, put a tea bag in it.
It's just a process, too. I remember one day, I mean, I've been staring at these photographs forever. And then one day I just looked and went, wait, there's something on the wall there, and realized this isn't just paint. And it was just a sense of the grass paper.
Right.
And that just brought it to life, too, to just have that texture and that luminescence in the paper that we ended up picking.
Was that the red? Like that red? Was that grass? Was that?
No, that was paint, but in the main room.
Like in the living room by the front door, sort of.
Yeah, all through the in the mirrored room.
Yeah.
Beautiful. For episode 3 with the black and white ball, how was that? And also working with Zach Posen, was there things like that affected the set because of the outfits or anything like that, coordinating with wardrobe? Or I mean, it was black and white too. I mean, you got to consider that when you're shooting it.
Black and white.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I've said a couple of times that by the time we got to that, once we secured the location of actually shooting in the ballroom at the Plaza Hotel,
mm-hmm.
it was almost like a break for us, because it was all about the costume. You know, we had the locations and the costumes were going to be the costumes, and they were brilliant. Lou's work on the show is just been, I mean, it was a fantastic collaboration between us and wardrobe.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
But that the reality of doing the black and white ball was one of the simpler things that we did on the show, because it was sort of historically not, he always said that the people would be the decorations. And so we, you know, as he used the hotel tables with red tablecloths, so did we. And
yeah.
And it was pretty simple. There was a hurdle. They added more scenes to that. The whole confrontation with Demi Moore's character was added, and we couldn't afford to shoot in the Plaza. So I had to find another location that could couple up with it. And so that was tricky.
That was the Polish consulate.
Yeah, we ended up in the Polish consulate, which I don't believe anything had ever shot there. I found it on Julie and Julia. We didn't shoot it. And then I remembered it for Halston. And we were going to shoot it for a hotel, but then COVID came. And then by the time we came back, we couldn't shoot there. But then all of a sudden, I remembered it again for this, and we went. And the black and white notion of it all helped just merge it in a way that was pretty flawless.
Yeah, it's seamless. I didn't care.
Yeah, half of that. See, everything that wasn't in the ball. I mean, we shot outside of the ballroom in the actual hotel, but most of the scene with the chicken hash and the bar and everything with Ann Woodward was shot in the Polish consulate on Madison Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. They love to have an aesthetic.
Don't you just love, oh my God, we're the first people to shoot here. Don't you just love that? Like, oh, no one's, you have, I haven't seen this 30 times somewhere else. This is so nice. Like,
And it was so great because we were 1966 for the hotel. Some of the details that they had added to this, I mean, stunning Beaux-Arts mansion, but it had now become a consulate. So they had this bar. It all just worked, you know, things that a bit of a mishmash, but it was the Plaza in the 60s, and it was perfect for us.
Was that the bar with when his mom shows up? Or, no, that's the bar at the house.
That was the bar in LA at Joanne Carson's house. There were just, I mean, we did have rolling bars that we used from the hotel that were just around in the vestibules outside of the, but there was a more formal bar. I think that was when somebody comes up to Truman and says, we have interlopers, and he goes to find Demi there in the by the staircase.
It's such a, and I knew that this miniseries or limited series was happening. So I read the book like last summer. I love the book. The book to me is fascinating. Yeah, Capote's Women. Such a good read. And so like, God, you were such a prick to these women who weren't nice people anyway, but you were so mean to them. And then like the Radswell fight with him and like, which they kind of, I mean, obviously you guys get into it, but God, it was such a, it's such a great story on its own. I do love in this series how they suppose what happened to Answered Prayers and like the whole theory of him actually you know, finishing and burning it and that whole process with like his mom and like there's a lot going on. A lot going on.
There is a lot going on. I mean, again, you've seen the whole series in this way or after it's done, but you know, the last couple of episodes when it just gets into those fever dreams and there's death and death and Answered Prayers. And I think when I first read the final episode, I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What do we need to do? But it became fun because then when we got to that point, again, it was that location that we used for Silver Hill for the rehab. That was something that I had found and was trying to push to be the Palm Beach location for CC's Thanksgiving before we ended up in the perfect Vanderbilt mansion where we shot that. But it was another one where we did a couple of things. But they had this fantastic octagonal room that we pitched for to be Lee Radswell's place. And we had, I mean, she had so many different kinds of looks in the research, but one of them was this very dramatic red room. And I just, at the last minute, I remember just walking down to your office with the book and saying,
well, it's funny, because we almost did that. When we were going to shoot that in the dining room, we almost went, I think Henry was there.
Right.
We were, but you were like, let's just keep the wallpaper because we never really saw it.
Oh, right.
We ended up, because we were going to go with the red thing, but I'm glad we waited and did it.
Yeah. We had the dining room of that mansion that I talked about earlier. We turned into Happy Rockefeller's bedroom when she's on the phone with Bill. But we barely saw it. Like by that point, I think we knew how that room had been shot.
Right.
So we saw very little of it. And I said, well, why don't we just turn this into Lee's or something else and we can keep the wallpaper. And it was a little.
Did that get cut?
No, it's in there, but it's just a lot tighter of her on the, she's sitting on the bed. It's
so long. I mean, it's like, I really do.
No, I know. Well, then there's so many things too, like you're saying, like did it get cut, and then you're like, wait, I did this whole set, we did this whole big room, and now she's on the phone next to the headboard, like what?
Yeah,
we gave you the whole room, which usually I feel like Ryan Murphy shows they keep it wide a lot, which is good, but obviously things get cut and we never know till the end till we're watching it, but there, when you know when it's shot somewhere and you can repurpose things, it's always helpful.
Yeah.
Like, did anybody see this? Did we turn around?
I mean, a kind of traumatic version of that for us was that when we did the whole murder by death sequence, we shot that in a giant mansion. And I came up with this idea to reverse engineer it where we found the dining room and then there was a giant atrium room outside of it. So I pitched that could be the sound stage. So we built the backs of the flats.
Oh.
To frame the doorway. And there was an entire sequence that was supposed to be when he's drunk on the phone, getting his hair and makeup done. That was supposed to be in a much larger space that was fully realized and dressed and looked like an entire soundstage with Warner Brothers and elephant doors. And we built all of that. But it was the same location in this old mansion. The steam baths was an old tiled kitchen, and the stairs and all of that was in the same mansion. So they started the day there. Took too long in the steam baths. So by the time we got to our massive murder by death set, they couldn't shoot the second piece of him on the phone in the giant set that we built. So that became, well, we'll just get some lights and some cables and shoot it in a little corner. And it looked great.
Yeah.
We know.
But we know. Yeah, you know.
We know what it was. It was that all of that world was much bigger than you know, it appears in the show. But it still looks great. I mean, it looks great.
That's always the hurtful thing. Nobody knows but me. Like, oh, that pillow didn't get in there, or you know, like these little details that you like lose sleep over, and then you're like, oh, they didn't even shoot it, and I stayed up all night.
Yes,
welcome to the business.
Yeah, the show also goes through decades of life. I mean, you end up at the auction of his ashes and everything, and so as you work through these decades, did you try, which is kind of ridiculous in a sense, because no one, style doesn't change in everybody's houses like with every year, but in controlling that through the periods, did you have fun with that? Did you like changing the things here and there, going to the 70s? I mean, the Studio 54 and all the, you know, from the...
We had to do that in the Paley apartment too.
Yeah.
Just to show, you know, time changing. We had to change. We changed certain elements. We swapped chairs, changed pillows, changed lamps to, you know, to try to make it look at least like they had, you know, there had been time that had passed. But yeah, I mean, as in doing any of those things, it's fun to sort of move out of a certain era and think about something else for a minute, you know.
Yeah, the flashing, I mean, the stuff in the first episode that goes back to the 50s was definitely, I mean, doing Bill's office at CBS. And
yeah, that was fun.
And the location for Jamaica was a beautiful location that, I read the script and it's like, where am I going to do, I mean, these iconic Slim Aaron photographed, I mean, Round Hill, Jamaica, that it's, you know, photos of Babe and Truman in this place. And that was the first easiest location I found, was this the White Plains, New York Women's Club. That was just amazing. And then there was a conversation and a push to say, well, we have to shoot this in LA, because why would we, you know, we'll just go to LA. We have to go there anyway for Joanne Carson. And the whole time I'm thinking, but we have this, I mean, it's an amazing spot. And quite honestly, I had an experience years ago where we shot in Puerto Rico on a mountaintop at night, and it was our first day of shooting, and Richard Gere said, what are we doing here? Because you couldn't see outside the windows.
Because it's dark.
I'm using that as an example.
Yeah.
That we're not going to see what's outside the windows unless you make a big, and then we couldn't find anything in LA. So we ended up going back at the end of the series and shooting the original location, the very first place I'd found in February. And the pool, again, we said this earlier, but the pool that is in Jamaica was the pool that was at the mansion out in Oyster Bay. Mm-hmm. So it was freezing and there were no leaves on the trees, but it was dark. And we just put some banana palms in the foreground and got the pool lit. And it was, you know, it looks gorgeous.
The whole thing looks gorgeous.
It was doing that set in the 50s. I mean, it was a classic, beautiful. It was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of my favorite sets. It just...
I'm really surprised like how much you're saying of the repurposing that you had to do, because you can't tell it all. Like, you know, I mean, you know, like you sit there and you watch TV sometimes and you're like, oh, look at that. Or like, oh, yeah, I see that. Or you can't. It's flawless, really. I mean, all of these sets are so like perfectly individual that you can't tell anything. That's fantastic.
Thank you
very much. Oh, I mean, you know, I have to keep track of what you've seen and how it was photographed, but we knew. I mean, we sort of knew. It's like, all right, we only saw this.
Yeah.
So let's just do it again.
We've become the masters of repurposing. We did it on Halston too. We used like some of the furniture so many times. We just have slip covers made for it and use it.
Well, you guys must be good on budget. I don't know. New set. No, not at all.
You also, it seems daunting at the beginning, again, because you don't know the scripts and then they start coming in, but it's like doing commercials when you just do them back to back. You just get into this zone.
I know that set list comes out all of a sudden and you're like,
Do they know it's only an hour? It's only an hour, right? It's only an hour. How can they fit all this into an hour?
Yeah.
I mean, you just, I mean, it's like they all, there's so many sets that they just keep popping into my head. I mean, when you think about the department store.
Oh my God, that glove counter. When she goes, it's so sad when she goes in for that glove counter and that chick is like kind of mean to her. It's sad.
That was a completely empty, it was a, what was that place? It was the original
Brooks Brothers.
Brooks Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Escalators, the wood escalators that went up and down. And, you know, I kept just trying to get Gus and Jason to say, all right, how can we, here's the best option. How can we shoot this so that we can afford to do it? And at the end of the day, you guys just did the whole thing.
We dressed the whole floor of the store.
Oh, that's
it was empty. There was not a single thing.
It was
completely empty.
Department stores are the worst.
No store fixtures, no anything.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
We had an illustrator on Halston who did all of the Joe Eula illustrations.
Ooh.
That we commissioned on that, and I remembered her work, and one day I just thought of Anita again, and I went to her Instagram, because she has all, because she did fashion illustration to a degree, so we just went back to her, and we got a lot of her stuff. I don't know if it's as evident in the show, but we just had beautiful watercolors that we blew up to be,
we sort of put them around to hide shelving that we, so that we could reduce the amount of shelves that we had to start dressing on.
Cherish did. I mean, you just did a brilliant job of finding the, I mean, we were just looking at it again yesterday. I said, where did these clothes come from? And she got the vintage clothes that actually matched the, I mean, they were in the same palette as the artwork. And then the rest of the stuff that was just in volume was H&M or?
Yeah, I went to, just my driver and I went to H&M and I was like, pull up. I'll be back in 20 minutes. I would just buy every single, like multiples of every single dress that I could find that looked like it belonged in that era.
And God, I'm shocked H&M's so cool.
I know. Well, and then, so all of the hero dresses were actually purchased from a woman who collects and deals in vintage clothing. So all the hero ones are real.
Right.
And then all the ones that you see on the racks are just from Zara or H&M or whatever. We just sort of tried to stick to a very like limited color palette.
Right.
You know,
just period palette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big giveaway at the end because we have like 500.
Oh, yeah. Giveaway. I literally have done the same thing up at like, I pull up to like the Beverly Center, like just take all of these clothes. And they're like, what are you taking all our clothes from? I'm like, I just need them. I'm not going to return them either.
Like you sell this stuff, right?
I'll take all your extra larges. I'll take everything. I just need
stuff. Yeah.
I wanted to ask also about lighting and using practicals and everything. Cause I know it's become such a, and actually on Impeachment, I really had a great time with our DP, Simon Dennis, working with practicals and everything. Cause again, it's all hard ceilings and it's all us now, kind of. So just talking about like getting those period practicals in there to work, I know it's sometimes a challenge.
It's a, you know, the whole lighting thing is a total challenge, as I'm sure you're aware of, because everything is LED, which they hate.
Yeah.
So anything that you buy that's new has got to be converted. Or, you know, buying practicals that are things like vintage lamps and stuff, that part I enjoy. It's the actual other types of fixtures that I can't stand doing. You know, it's like one of those things. It's just, I've said, well, when we did Escape at Dannemora, we had to do tons of lighting in prisons and things like that. And it's almost like you need at this point a liaison between the electric department.
Yeah, fixtures guy.
Department, because I don't know anything about, and I'm married to a gaffer, for 25 years. So I just come home sometimes, I'm like, I ask him questions. I said, I don't even know how to do this. You know, if you need it for technical reasons, then they need to have somebody.
Yeah.
Like who I'm, you know, I'm doing it for the aesthetics. And if it needs to be something that's actually going to light the set, then somebody else from that department needs to get involved. But like doing the, it's fun. I love lighting. So yeah, it's like, it's really fun to shop for all the vintage, just lamps and things like that.
Yeah.
But the other side of it is
I know,
like a next level.
And it changes from show to show. Like, because I find like, oh, they like a 400 something. And then like, this guy doesn't want that. But I feel like lately, like I do ask, like in the beginning of the show, like we're going to have a fixtures person, right? Like you're saying, like a liaison, yeah, because it's great that the practicals are now like in there and really being used for their purpose and everything. Cause I think it just gives so much more emotion. Not that it hasn't been around for decades, but I'm saying like now it's kind of really us getting into it. And I really like that collaboration too.
It's the other thing is, the budget aspects of dealing with that kind of stuff too. Cause I did get a bill from House Electric for like $4,000 for light bulbs. And I took it to the producer and said, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I've never paid for light bulbs. Yeah. No.
I mean, but they code it to us. And I said, I can't be paying for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I need to be buying sofas and things like that. I can't be buying $4,000 in light bulbs. Why is it my responsibility?
Here's what I say. I say, well, if you don't need your package anymore, then I get that in my budget, right?
That's what I said to the producer, basically. Like whatever money that they were getting now should be
exactly
transferred to me.
Exactly. You know? I mean, it has to come out of somewhere. We all know that. Yeah. But now since it's more on our plate, we just need they're not getting as much. They're not renting as much anymore. And so it has to be allocated somewhere and it should just go to us and our sofas.
Exactly.
I concur.
Yes.
And our throw pillows.
Yes. Tassels and fabric.
I can only imagine how much money we spent on throw pillows on the show. Yeah. Throw pillows and drapes. You're lucky because in LA you guys have a draper.
Yes.
I don't have a draper. They don't do that on the East Coast. So I'm responsible for all of the drapery on my own, measuring.
They don't. Why not? Why does one guy tell your one guy specialize in this and then no?
They don't do it. So
that sucks.
It actually became like a running joke, and the cinematographer started calling me Shearish.
You're shearing them all up.
Every time we went to a place, he would just look at me, and I'd just be like, Jason, no.
More shears? Can't we ever see out? That's what I was saying. Like, let's look out. Let's look out into the world. Just shear it up.
We did find that great. You used that company. They had done the Gilded Age.
Yeah, we did find somebody, but they only did a few sets for us. But the necessity really came from having so many drapes.
Yeah.
That I had to call a friend of mine who was another decorator, Regina Graves. And I said,
I love her. I talked to her last week. Yeah.
I said, who was the draper that you used? Because she found a company. I said, because my person couldn't execute. We had three like drapery companies working for us because we had so much drapery.
Yeah.
That the one person couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Like the upholstered room was done by a completely separate person than I usually use just because Colleen, who I use at Circle, couldn't crank it out fast enough. So we had to hire different people to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
and found those people who were great.
Especially on like period pieces or like White House or things like that, like having a draper is phenomenal because you just discuss the look, they bring you the samples, they talk about it more, oh, they're out of this, or do you want it to hit the ledge, whatever you want. And then it's done, like that's your, that go do it. You're done.
They were exquisite. They did Slim Keith's bedroom, which was this giant room that needed, I mean, the whole canopy around the bed and all of the drapes.
Oh, yeah.
By the balances and all, they were just stunning when they came in, and they were just, you know, this is what they do.
They also did the red room drapery too.
Oh, yeah. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Beautiful. Oh, wow.
But like, it all comes, you know, it all came from me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do my own horror, but like it all.
No, it's still on your plate. It's not like, yeah.
it's, you know, they don't show up with fabrics or anything. They just come and say, they'll take some measurements and do it. But they only did it for a couple of locations.
And you do hardware and you do wallpaper, right? Do you do wallpaper? Yep. Yeah.
And flooring.
Yeah.
Like carpet? Or like
carpet,
hardwood
floor? Tile. Just not hardwood, because that's usually, well, I would if it was purchasable, but usually it's done by the carpenters and the scenics.
Isn't it so weird how the responsibilities are so different? Like, yeah. It's so weird. I mean, I wouldn't mind jumping in on those things too, but then what would the art director do?
No. Well, the other thing is, we don't have prop houses like you guys do either. So it's really like a wild chase to try to find all the stuff, because it's not like, I mean, I have worked in LA only, you know, briefly, but going to a prop house and they have, you know, 50 different red sofas.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, it's like we manufactured everything. Like everything on the show was either, you know, found and reupholstered or had needed touch up paint because it was in a house with a smoker years ago or something, right. You know, like everything.
Did you purchase a lot like Etsy or like online auctions or like period stuff? Yeah.
So we have in New York a store called Kayo. I don't know if you guys have that there.
No.
They have a website and it's an extensive website. They have, it's all up and down the East Coast for sure. But they sell all different kinds of furniture, like antiques, new stuff. So I did a lot from that. I did buy some stuff from Cherish, except for it's a fortune. And a lot of times it's got to be shipped from Texas.
Yeah, the shipping kills you.
But if you're looking for something specific, that's a good place to go. But if you, like at the beginning of the job, I just sat down for hours and went through the website and just bought anything that I thought would be appropriate for the show, not any specific set. Just, you know, I spent like $10,000 on my first thing, just like this bed, this bed, you know, and then just went and like, we'll find a spot for it. It might be reupholstered later, but let's just start to
making your own prop house in a sense and having extras and everything. Yeah.
And they all sort of, at that particular time, they were sort of into French antiques and like Chinese antiques. And so, you know, you sort of start buying stuff and then you can figure out where you're going to use it, you know,
but
how it fits in.
Because you need extras, even though you think like, oh, I got everything for the room. You're like, oh.
And I don't think there was a single thing that we bought that we didn't end up using unless it showed up broken or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And even or then, this we're big. Like, close that ring back on.
Yeah. Get it well,
for episode three, when black and white, we were able to then just use stuff again because it was in black and white. And yeah, that helped a lot.
Yeah.
So did Gossip Girl.
Yeah. So we were at Steiner and Gossip Girl was also there. And they were trying to get rid of all their stuff because they didn't know if they were ever going to come back. And the lead man on that show was my former lead man.
Oh, fun.
And so he called me and he said, do you want to come over? And oddly enough, there was like some stuff from Halston because he was my lead man on Halston. Like he had just, you know how they just acquire stuff from other shows. I'm looking around, I'm like, wait, that was already mine once.
Right,
you
know? Right.
But I love Tom and he was so gracious and just let us go through the shop. And we really, I mean, we had like 3 or 4 trucks worth of stuff that came.
Oh, that's great.
Even have to pay for.
And a lot of that unloaded into CC Guest Mansion, which again for the IRS raid, was an empty, you know, now it's a school. That was actually her real, she lived there in the Templeton, the mansion that we shot in.
Oh my gosh.
But it's now like, you know, a wedding venue. It's not a home. So we had to fill it.
Oh my God.
A lot of Gossip Girl up there.
That's always great though to get things off of another show because the repurposes are so much like waste or like, you know, usually end up donating and everything, but it's so nice to like repurpose. Like,
oh, we did that at the end of our show. We just had any other Ryan Murphy production just came over, like have at it, you know.
So. That must have been a good one. That must have been a bring your truck haul, like good stuff.
I know. We had a lot of nice stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
That was another good example of, again, that room, the leopard and pink room that we did DC. There's scenes in episode 3, but we just never knew when we were going to go. Like, is CC's world going to expand? Are we going to come back here in a color episode? So we did it. I mean, we tried to make it so that if we came back in color, it worked as well. And that room, which was one of my favorites on the show, just was cut again. But it's too bad. It was great.
No, it was a really, I have some photo of it, and it's just, like somebody just sitting on the, it was so pretty. Aww. It was a really nice looking room.
Well, it's all really gorgeous. I mean, even though you're saying we miss some stuff, which is a bummer, it's a gorgeous show. I mean, top to bottom, it's just so fun to, it's so lush to watch. Even like when he's drunk and being weird, like even like just looking behind him on the wall and seeing those like paintings and the red wall and like everything is just, he's, you know, it's just fantastic. I loved it. I really would watch it again. I've watched Halston twice. I think that is a phenomenal series. And I must say, I have watched Julie and Julia probably 50 times.
Really?
I only watch the Meryl Streep parts. I have pretty much, because I just want to believe that her and Stanley Tucci are like together somewhere, like being cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Really. I love that film. But thank you guys so much. But so fantastic to get to kind of meet you and just admire your work. I really really admire it. So thank you so much for doing this.
So much. This was a lot of fun. It was great.
Yeah.
So great to meet you.
Great to meet you guys. Hopefully someday in person.
Absolutely.
But we'll see you soon. And this will come out right.
I am so thankful that I got to speak to them. And I just think it's magical that they can take a location and keep turning it over and over and over into different rooms and keep using it. And we're magicians. And the weird thing is, I do it too, but to hear and to watch something and see it and then hear them talk about the transformation, it's awesome. We're magicians. But I love it as a viewer, and then being told about it, I just love, I don't know, I love it. I love the process that we all go through and hearing about all this. I'm such a dork. But I am so thankful that I got to talk to them, and man, what a beautiful series to be a part of. Just the glamour of it, and Capote. I mean, I don't know. I'm just in on it all. I hope you've watched it, and just, I hope you're in too. So, yeah. So, let's talk about the next couple weeks. I have a couple of the film studies coming up. I have 1929 with Jamie Walker McCall, and then I have 1965 with Adam Rau, and then we jump ahead a decade and do 1975. So that'll be the next 3 weeks of the podcast is the film study, unless something comes up, and then we'll bump. How about that? But yeah. So I hope you got an earful, of course. I am Kim Wanup. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.